This is the No Switch Fitness Podcast. We want to help guide your journey into developing your best physique. With your host, Luke Miller.
Hey guys, welcome back to the No Switch Fitness Podcast and our series Applied Resistance. Today, I'm really excited to be here with IFBB Pro Meg Sylvester, someone that I followed for a long time and really started following in my own prep, was very inspired by it, and then had the opportunity to travel out there and train with her a little bit in our trip to the UK last month. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I think it's funny because I think you were a bit nervous to meet me and I was a little bit nervous to meet you, because I think that both just thought, oh my God, she's absolutely amazing. I'm so scared to meet her. But it was just so easy.
I know. And it's cool because it's like, it's weird to see someone from afar and it's like you have this idea of what they're like, and then you meet them in person and it's like, it's so refreshing also when you realize how much you have in common and how much you share from a mindset perspective.
Yeah.
And it's just cool that we have not only like the aspect of being athletes, but coaches too.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's hard to come by people that are similar though, even though we're not similar in background or similar in kind of upbringing, just everything in terms of mindset with everything is just so similar. So it was nice. It was refreshing because I've never met someone who have been like, wow, okay, that's amazing.
And it's cool because as you get deeper into something that you're passionate about, like if you pursue it on a deeper level, I think you start to find yourself like being around more and more people who agreed.
Be quiet. That's because Cuba just left, so I apologize.
He will
relax in a second.
You are fine. So from your background, I know you've talked about your background like a lot, so I don't want to have you like hash through everything that you have constantly repeated, but you have a background as an athlete.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that. Like, where did you start in sports?
Prior to bodybuilding since I was like seven, I was a competitive diver for Great Britain. So not like scuba diving, actually diving off a platform. So that kind of started when I was seven. I was doing gymnastics at the time, and within the UK at that current time, we were doing a lot of things to do with like grassroots. We still do it with football, but we don't really push it a lot with other sports anymore. I think kind of COVID got rid of that for some kind of reason that I don't know why. But yeah, I basically came through a grassroots of, I was in gymnastics. Someone kind of spotted me as kind of talent, I guess you could say. And then I progressed on to becoming a diver. And I dived for Great Britain from the age of 9 all the way up to kind of the age of 21. Kind of did Commonwealths, Worlds. Well, you won't know what you probably know what the Commonwealth Games is, but obviously the United States aren't really a part of it. But yeah, I was part of the Commonwealth Games, selected for the Olympics, been to the World Championships, placed at the World Championships, done the European Championships, was placed first and was heading Europe for a couple of years. So yeah. It was a great time, and I think that's kind of what solidified my mindset as an athlete, really, just from doing it from such a young age. I don't think that I feel like it's a chore. I think that lots of people, I don't think it's a bad thing that when people go into bodybuilding that they have to learn how to become an athlete first, and then kind of the journey of a bodybuilder comes, because everybody starts at different points. People start their competitive sporting, any kind of journey at such a different time, and no one way is the best. But it was definitely a very easy transition, especially with like the food and the training being so, I was going to use the word restrictive. I'm not allowed to do that. With it being so the same all the time and not really being able to be a normal person, because we will be honest, it probably does take away from your goals if you are trying to still be a normal person. So I think that because I'd done that already, that kind of transition, it wasn't like what do I do here? I can't do X, Y, and Z things anymore, because I'd never really been able to do those things.
Yeah, it's interesting how people get into bodybuilding from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Because depending on where you came from, some of the things that you bring with you help you, and then some things you have to like unlearn.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I have some clients who are in the military, and I feel like they tend to be really good at the routine because that's just what they know. They're used to following orders to a degree. Yeah. Athletes too. But then there's other things we have to work through. Like there's got to be some things with diving versus bodybuilding where there wasn't overlap, or now you're not in a structured sport where someone's there coaching you, telling you, all right, here's what you're doing every single day. Like you have a little bit more autonomy.
Yeah.
So what was hard about that transition?
I think the fact that I wasn't with my coach every day was the hardest part, because, and I actually moved to be coached by a guy who was at the gym that I was training at just because of that fact. But then I quickly realized that you don't need to be with your coach all of the time to be great at it, because with diving, the support that you get from your coach there's a lot of things like drills in the dry gym, or kind of in the gymnastic area as well as in the pool, that they support you with, like they actually hands-on support you with, whereas you don't really need that as a bodybuilder. As long as kind of you've got your plan, you've got X, Y, and Z things, you can kind of just crack on, and it's down to you really as to how well you stick to it. Whereas with diving, it was kind of, this is what we're doing, but I am going to be here making sure that you are doing it. Otherwise, I know that you're probably not going to do it, because a lot of us are so young anyway. But I guess towards the end of my career, it was a little bit different. I could kind of choose the things that I wanted to do. There was a lot more choice with it. So again, the transition was easier, but I think the coach aspect was the biggest thing really. And the fact that the eating was, obviously I had to eat well when it came to diving, but it was never a case of getting rid of everything ever. There was always an element of, okay, on a Friday, I'd be having a meal with my family that was kind of off from my current regime. And there was never really a time that wouldn't happen, even like the week of competition, as long as the day after wasn't your competition day. So I think the eating was a really big kind of eye opener for me, because I definitely didn't cope very well in my first prep, my first prep. And I'll completely open and put my hands up to that one. I did not do well. So I think that was very different and was a very big eye opener for me.
So what was that like? What was your relationship with food like in that prep and following it?
So prior to competing, I went through a real strange phase of not eating a lot. I don't really like to put a label on it as an eating disorder, because I don't think it was as deep as that. But there was definitely like an issue with me with food. And it was a whole, every couple of weeks I'd have like a big something to eating. And then the rest of the time it was quite restrictive. So I think I went into bodybuilding having that mindset already. And obviously my first prep, it was a really intensive prep. It was like 10 weeks eating pretty much around 800 calories, doing a lot of cardio in the morning, doing a lot of cardio at nighttime. Even my following prep was pretty much the same, but that was because my off season, my first prep obviously didn't go very well. But my mindset post the first prep was horrendous. I just wanted everything. I'd be sat there working and I'd be like, oh, I need to eat this, I need to eat that. And I'd eat that much. Not that I'd feel sick because I have a big appetite, but to the point where like my jaw would hurt and I'd be like, wow, what am I doing? So I had to have a serious word with myself and sorted myself out.
So what was that like? Like how did you That's hard. It's hard to be honest with yourself in a situation like that. But then it's also hard to actually like uproot some of these like habits that you kind of build around food. Like, what did that process look like?
So I have very, very, very honest parents. And I also have very, very, very honest friends, people that aren't anything to do with bodybuilding. Like the majority of my friends are not bodybuilders, apart from kind of people that I've met and are friends with. But like my grassroots friends are not anything to do with kind of bodybuilding at all. So they see it from a perspective that's not bodybuilding. And I think that sometimes we sweep it under the carpet as, yeah, it's okay because you're a bodybuilder and sometimes that happens. And that's okay because sometimes that happens and everybody has that mindset post a prep at some point or during a prep, and that is okay, but actually it's not really. So my friends and my family were very honest. They actually sat me down. It was almost like they call it something where people sit people down,
like an intervention.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And they were like, you need to sort it out because it's that your eating habits are not okay. You have put on a lot of weight and I know that this is not like bulking kind of off-season look. This is Meg actually quite chubby, so you need to sort yourself out. So either allow us to help you or sort it out for yourself. So I did.
Wow, that is hard to confront someone like that, but I think it shows that you have such a good support system. And like, people don't have to have a support system in bodybuilding. It just has to be people who like love you enough to be honest with you and to know what you want most. And they know like you want to be healthy, you want to live a happy life and have a good relationship with food. Yeah. And if they know you well enough, they can tell when you're not in a good spot with that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that when you've been a certain way for so long and they see that kind of different side and kind of a person that's not quite there because they're thinking about something else when normally they'd be so active in a social environment, I think that's when they thought, okay, we need to tell her, so she even needs to stop this bodybuilding or she needs to sort it out so that she can carry on.
That's so true. I think we want to like zone into whatever we do, but there's like I think unhealthy level of that where we can zone in so much to something where it becomes obsessive and it takes a part of us with it. Yeah. And if you're not able to be like fully yourself in whatever you're pursuing, like it's probably time to reevaluate whether that's because of the diet or because you're so stressed about a routine and not really about just being the best version of you, which I think is what's required to be a good athlete. It's like, you got to know those limits with yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you can probably relate to it in the sense of you don't like going out of your routine and going away to the UK and being in a different environment was such a, exciting prospect, but like stressful as well. And I think that lots of people would always say, well, you should be really appreciative of the fact that you can do X, Y, and Z things from anywhere in the world, when in actual fact, like, going out of that for someone that feels like they have to rely upon that to be great, it's a stress. And I think there's so many things within bodybuilding that's very much like that, that probably for the most part does need to be done, but we can also have that element of, okay, let's take a little bit of a step out of that box for a second to think about kind of future and bigger picture.
So it seems like we talked a little bit about your dynamic with Kuba, and he seems a little bit more not strict with his routine, but I don't even want to say uncompromising because it's not that you're not, but it just seems like you provide balance in the relationship with stuff like that.
I'm okay with going away out of my environment and still being kind of, how can I put it without giving the wrong impression to people? I think that there's a time and a place to be able to go out of your routine and be able to kind of give back to each other, whether you're in a relationship or to be able to do certain normal person things, to take like a Christmas, for example. Mm. I feel like that is a time of year that it is okay to break out of your bubble, be in a social family environment, as long as obviously it's something that you celebrate, that it is okay to do that. I mean, I'm not saying that every month, every week, you have to do that, but I do think that getting and having a mental break from that normal kind of regimented routine is so, so, so healthy. I think, again, it comes from diving. Like, we used to have 2 weeks each year where we could go on holiday. It was literally called shutdown. So we'd literally be given 2 weeks out of the year where we could go on holiday, we can go and do whatever we want. We were still under guidelines as to the fact that, like, I would, in my contract, I was never allowed to do dangerous sports. So that's like skiing, ice skating, anything that I could possibly break something doing. Bearing in mind, I actually broke my ankle running for my core diving. Yeah, so I definitely wasn't allowed to do any extreme sports. And I like to go on a girls' holiday. So, like, we were talking about this when you came over. Our, like, girls' holidays, going to Ibiza and having lots of drinks, enjoying some kind of house music, techno music, etc. It's late nights, not a lot of sleeping, very much like your kind of spring break, etc. I was under guidelines. I was not allowed to do that. If that happened, I was taken off all funding. I wasn't allowed to compete for GB ever again. It wasn't even a case of a slap on the hand, don't do it again. It was simple, clear cut. If you do that, you're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z things. So I feel like now I'm okay with taking a few times in the year where I break out of my bubble, still stay within a certain like parameter of kind of my own idea of the guidelines, that I'm okay with doing that. It's like around my wedding and Christmas last year were pretty much the only times that I broke out of my bubble and did different things that were normal people things. And then I'll probably not do anything this year apart from I'm going to see Rhea in America. But again, the only real difference is that I'm going on a plane. The rest of the things will be the same. So as much as it's out of my routine, it's still the same.
Yeah, I think people want like an exact answer of, yeah, okay, well, you know, how many cheat meals should I be able to have in a certain amount of time? Or, you know, can I eat this? And it's like, it's all going to come back to your overall context, like your big picture, your goals, your timeline. Like, also, you have to be very honest with yourself about your relationship with, yeah, food and your relationship with your routine and your ability to, okay, if I have a meal off track, can I then snap back on after that? Like, and sometimes that, often, I think that changes over time.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you first start out with competing and after your first season, I have a couple of clients currently that are going back into off season and it was their first season competing, and they have that guilt there at the moment of, I'm not doing the same every day that I was doing when I was in prep, because I'm going to meet a friend for a coffee. I am going to the cinema at a different time. On a weekend, my family's asked me to go out for some food, not every weekend, but every other weekend. And I feel, my client was saying, I feel bad, I feel guilty. And I was just like, no, because prep is a time that you have zero energy and you have to kind of keep that energy for the things that you need to do to make your prep successful. Whereas when you're in an off-season setting, you have more energy to be able to do those things that require energy, because it's not going to suck it away from you. So it is okay to do that and to give back. And I think that's one thing that Cooper struggles with, because, like, he's his own person and he's fantastic at everything that he does, but he doesn't like being away from home. He doesn't like being away from his home environment. And we've tried and been places and done things, and like it still causes stress. So if you don't enjoy it and it causes you stress and you'd rather just be in your routine, just do that, because there's no point. Just do what makes you happy, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think the difference is, okay, are you avoiding something that does fulfill you because there's this guilt, because there's a should that you're placing in there? Or are you avoiding something because it actually is a stressor to you? Like the UK trip to me was this thing I stressed about for months, because I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about my transportation, how I'm going to get food, like what their schedule is going to be like. I was at the whim of whoever I was staying with, like, which is a blessing to be able to go and stay with people. But it's also like, I have no control over this. But I also felt like, this is a situation that I'm going to get so much fulfillment from if I can just move past my discomfort with it. Yeah. And I'm so glad I did, because I learned, like, I have the capacity to transplant my routine and take it with me and make progress.
Yeah.
But if that situation was like, this whole trip is just a massive stressor and really wouldn't fulfill me in any way, it's like, at that point, is it worth it? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally, but we have like the hierarchy of needs, and like at the bottom, it's like food and safety. And in prep, it's like you're stuck at that rung all the time. Yeah. In off season, you got that covered. So let's move up to the love and belonging.
Yeah.
Let's move up to those levels of like, okay, as a person, to be a whole person, you need people, you need to fulfill yourself with like experiences, whether that's, you know, having a date night, or if that's traveling to another country, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
So you've been in off season how long now?
I think I've done more off season than I've done prepping my whole bodybuilding career. Should we just say forever?
So, okay. You were bikini first, right?
Yeah. Bikini.
Okay.
I didn't want to be bikini.
Hmm.
So I did bikini my first season just because I didn't have any muscle. I shouldn't have prepped because I didn't do any kind of muscle building prior. I literally went from diving where, I had an athletic physique, just to go into a gym and someone be like, oh, you have some muscle, let's do a competition. So that's why I fell into bikini. And then my second season, I did bikini and I had some muscle. I did quite well within the amateur ranks in the UK. And then I decided that I wanted to do figure. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I was like, I have some all right lats. My quads are quite okay when I do a front shot and kind of do any of the other shots. Like the shapes there, I just need more muscle. And my coach at the time was like, no. You need to do bikini because your shape's definitely very suited for bikini. I do believe that you can win your pro card in bikini, so you should stay within it. So I was like, all right, okay. So that's, I trusted his opinion, and I don't regret the decision to stay within bikini at all, and I don't have any kind of bad feelings towards the fact that that coach told me to do that, because I was able to achieve my pro status in that class the following year. But then it just didn't give me like the happiness. It just, like, the training, obviously I was very restricted as to what I could do in the lower half, because I did, even when I do anything to do with my glutes, my quads are just there like all the time. And I know that obviously most movements you can't stipulate getting rid of any like engagement in your quad. Like I totally get that, and I know that we can do movements that can bias the back of the leg, but like even when I was doing the back of the leg movements, my quads were just getting so like developed, and I was like, oh, this is just not working for me. So I had a conversation with Cooper, and it was my decision. He was obviously very supportive with that. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm ever going to be a great figure competitor. And I'm not saying that I couldn't have ever been a great bikini competitor, but like my love and enjoyment just wasn't there for the training or the class, really. I think it's beautiful. I just don't think that my physique, especially with how short I am, would have ever been anything spectacular really. I do think that you do have to be at least a little bit bigger than me, because I'm only 5 foot. Like, I'm so short, and that's probably quite short for figure, but at least they're not, did they generally come as tall as the bikini girls. So yeah, my love just was for figure. And I remember having a conversation with Jordan Peters at King's Gym in London, and he was like saying to Kube, like, yeah, like her shape could be figure, like that's not something that's unachievable. And I think that having kind of Kuba be very supportive with that, and also be very honest with the fact that yes, shape wise we could make that happen, and then obviously someone else whose opinion both of us really that comes in high regard to me, and I was like, okay, let's do it then. So I did like a 18 months off season, competed.
Okay.
In 2020, that 2020 was such a fun year. The competition that we did at the Europa in Alicante was so much fun. I got to see Ria win the figure and be able to get her qualification for the O. Like, that was so special to watch as a friend. I actually placed the best that I ever have at that show as well. So that was a really great achievement. And then obviously, current, I'm in an off season again.
Yeah. Do you have a timeline?
Yeah. So Kuba broke that down post my competing season last time. Obviously has a conversation around it with me, but kind of whatever he really says goes, because I really do I take his opinion as something that I don't think anybody else in the world would look out for me like he would. So I appreciate and respect his opinions on everything. So yeah, that is what we're doing. We're going to compete next year. And I think I'm going to compete a lot earlier than what I was going to set out to compete. Just because I know that there's going to be at least one season that has to be quite long, unfortunately, as a competitor. And we can all kind of brush it under the carpet and pretend that that's not a thing. But I think that if we're really true and honest between the both of us, I think that if you do want to make a mark, at some point you are going to have to do a long season with quite a few competitions, and that might not end up being a good one, but you have to kind of be there. So I think that that's what next year's going to have to be for me. So I think that I'm going to start competing in kind of July, August, and then probably run through to November. Yeah.
I think one thing that I just noted from you and some of our conversations is, like, as an athlete, there's this balance between, okay, I check in with my coach, they tell me what I need to do, like I check the boxes, I make it happen. But you have also, throughout your journey as an athlete, as a person, you've like checked in and you've known when it's time to shift course, like from diving to bodybuilding, from teaching to banking. Like you've made these reflective changes in your life. And I think it speaks to the fact that, like, it's okay to shift focus. You just have to be very clear with yourself as to what you want and what you need to do to achieve that, and find that balance between knowing when it's time to make an adjustment. Like, okay, maybe the timeline for next year needs to shift. You shouldn't be like completely set in it, because the body changes. You don't exactly know what could happen. Like, the world could shut down again. We don't know. Yeah. But you also have to be unwavering to a point where you know, like, okay, on those days when I'm not feeling it or doubting myself, like, there's this vision that I go back to.
Yeah. And I think that that's been something as of late that I've had to do, because I'm not a person that tends to be, I'm not saying that I'm confident in that I'm arrogant, but I'm confident in my ability to work hard. Mm. And after the last two seasons of not doing very well, I'll be honest, like it really is. It took a lot of like hit on me in my confidence as an athlete. And I don't think that that's something that I should be afraid to say. I think that the world in social media that we live in kind of expects you to be this kind of strong, confident character that you are because you've kind of got to that level of pro status, whereas kind of getting knocked down, it can have an effect on you. So I think having that kind of timeline set of when things like could have happened or can happen, I think having that there to be like, yeah, no, that there is a reason why I feel that way and that is okay, but there's all these things in place to make sure that that feeling shouldn't happen again.
Yeah. That's really awesome. I mean, I think that I've seen people who have done really well, like right off the bat. And then when they get knocked down, they either don't go back to the sport or they find every reason why it was someone else's fault, like the judge's fault or, you know, like just a bad call. And I think that there's value in not doing super well and getting that feedback. Like maybe you show up to your first show and you're totally just not ready at all, but you know that you love it. There's value in that. When you can find value in the failures, like I think that that's what really makes someone a standout athlete who can be in this sport for a really long time.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely been questions that I've asked myself in the past 6 months is, should I compete again? Should I not compete again? Will bodybuilding still be everything to me? Yes. Will I still put everything in as though I am a competitor? Yes. So it's obviously not my time to call it a day at all. And that's kind of the honest conversations that I've had to me. But obviously you've also got to be just super honest with yourself as to what it is that you want and what it is that you want to achieve, because Cuba can tell me X, Y, and Z good things or X, Y, and Z bad things, but at the end of the day, it is down to me as to what I want to do. And you're the same really with Luke, because you guys have such a caring relationship that you're not in that sense of mine and Cuba's, but you have enough care for each other and care for each other's lives as friends, that kind of level of kind of commitment within that, it is quite similar to what me and Cuba have. So I think that you can probably relate to that quite well.
Yeah, I mean, when I like made the call to not do physique and stay in figure, I called Luke about it and I was like, I just feel like ashamed. I feel embarrassed. I feel like I committed to this thing publicly and now I'm having to backtrack and I don't like feeling like I'm not sticking to my word or like that I'm giving up. And he was like, people are going to be so excited to see you doing something you love. And he's like, if you didn't ever want to do a cycle again and you wanted to do wellness, we'll work on your legs. And that level of support where it's like you have someone who's honest with you, which I think is the key. Like they have to be honest because anyone can hype you up and that is not your support system. Your hype men are not your support system. It's the people who will sit you down and have an intervention or sit you down and tell you the hard truths. But then to tell you like, hey, like at the end of the day, like you got into this because you love it and that you can't lose that in it.
Yeah. 100%.
So what was that?
I'm really excited for you to do figure.
I'm excited to get back. I broke out my heels again. I'm like, all right, these are so bad. So I have some like rapid fire questions for you.
Yeah.
So first off, what does success mean to you?
I think as an athlete, as a coach, I think success can come from so many different avenues. And success sometimes it's not always just a trophy or a placing or a certificate or anything like that. Those things are absolutely amazing. I think success is when something just feels so deep as like something deep and means so much to you that it's kind of flourished and developed into something that feels like such a win to you. And to me, that is success, something that just feels so right and so good at that time.
That is so great. Thanks. Okay, so what is your like mantra or your driving belief? Like, what do you go back to when you doubt?
I just go back to me. I go back to the drawing board. If I feel doubt, if I feel worried, if I feel unconfident, if I feel like things aren't right, I go away. I take myself away. I sit down. I weigh up all of my options, mm-hmm. and I just make a plan. And that's it. I don't have a saying that I go by. I think that's the norm, isn't it? Everybody has like a saying that they go back to that kind of flicks the switch and makes them back into that course. And I think that's something even from like the diving days that was drilled within us. You need to have a quote that means something to you, something that will kind of switch you out of that mindset. And that just doesn't work for me. So I take myself away. I sit down. Write down what is not okay, and I make a plan to make it different.
That is so, I totally agree with that. I saw this concept called fear setting, yeah. and it's where you like actually like write out your fears. And I find that to me is so much more helpful, because if I can see what I'm worried about and actually put it on paper and then work through it like visually, yeah. like, okay, this is how I move forward, as opposed to like, okay, like I'll just shove it down and just be like, all right, I'm enough. Like, that doesn't yeah. really get me as far, right? It's almost like yeah. if you can do the inner work, it's like yeah. you're building more of a foundation from which to come out of like every challenge moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think also the other thing, like with bodybuilding, it's like, oh, I must watch a motivation video before I go to the gym, because that is going to make me more motivated to go and do my set. No, I want to take myself away. I want to forget about the fact that I'm about to do X, Y, and Z things in the gym, and I'm just going to crack on. And that's just the way that I work.
Yeah. And I think you have to find what works for you. Like yeah. some people need that hype, whether yeah. that's the music they listen to in the gym. Like some people need to be centered. So with any of this, like there's no formula for being a great athlete. No. I think there's some like key components, but what I see as a theme is like being honest with yourself and finding a way to continue to foster that self-belief, yeah. And also having people in your corner who are honest and supportive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I totally agree.
What is something in your journey that has been just vital to you getting to where you are as an athlete, whether that's like a certain routine or a certain person or a certain practice that you do?
So in terms of bodybuilding, obviously Cooper's been a massive part to that journey. So I owe a lot of my success within bodybuilding, coaching, etc. to him. But kind of if there's been any kind of turning moments or anything like that, I think there's not been any kind of standout moments really that I've learned from. I think there's been so many like mistakes, lessons learned along the way that they've all kind of formed me as an athlete, formed me as a person of kind of who I am, to be able to take all of those things with me. And there'll be more lessons learned. There'll be more mistakes made that I'm really excited to make, to be able to form me even more as a person as I move on as a competitor, as a coach, and as a person away from bodybuilding also.
That's another thing. One more. I'm like so excited about this, because I've been studying a lot about success lately and like people who are successful and the things that they say. And another thing that I see consistently is people saying the value of failure and the value of failure to learn, and how we like actually, we need that. And the avoidance of the failure, I think, is when people get stuck like, oh, well, if I'm going to be successful, then I shouldn't be failing. It's like, no, if you're going to be successful, if you're going to be the best, you're going to be the worst a lot of times first, probably.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. It's like, there's probably calls that you've made as a coach. There's probably things that you've done as an athlete. There's probably things that you've done as a person in your life that have been kind of wrong and not the right thing to do, that you've just gone, right, okay, that can't happen again. You need to change that and make sure it's better next time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. What are your hobbies outside of bodybuilding?
Am I allowed to say it to your company?
Yep. And that's the reality of the sport.
Yeah. And I think that you can resonate with the fact that, apart from obviously coaching, so could we see that as, it's not really, because it's the same really, isn't it? Because they are bodybuilders. I have got a very obsessive personality, and unfortunately bodybuilding is my life, and as much as people don't want to admit that, or it's not normal or okay to be that way, unfortunately that is the case.
Yeah, and I think that's okay, and honestly I think there's a healthy level of obsession in every sport. I mean, I'm sure you saw that in diving too. It's like people who are at the highest levels, like this is their whole life.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think if you're not in it, like just being supportive of those who do truly love it, because there is that personality type of like, yeah, for some of us, this truly is enough and it really is fulfilling.
Yeah, well, it's like you look at boxers, UFC fighters, etc. They have camps prior to their events, yeah. But most of the time, because they know that the majority of competitions happen in a certain country, they completely shift their lives and go and live in that country. And I know that like a lot of other sports are the same, but I just use that as an example. But like we have people that are bodybuilders, or even just people that are serious trainers, that because of Ultraflex Cuba's gym that he owns, is such a great gym in Europe, that people have like moved their lives from like across the globe, across Europe, across the UK, to just come and base themselves there because of how much like they care about their training and being in an environment where the machines and everything are just amazing for them to be able to use.
Yeah, I think like you, again, it's like at that high level, it's like you start to structure your environment to better support how you're going to be in that sport or pursuit or whatever it is, whether that's like your support system or your equipment or, you know, the stores that you're around, like it really does all make a difference.
Or your occupation. It's like, I'm sure that you can definitely agree with kind of the background that you come from, that coaching is so fulfilling and it's such an awesome feeling to be able to help and support other people. But it's also something that really does allow you to be able to live a bodybuilding lifestyle, because you're able to do it from the comfort of your own home. Obviously, all coaches can be successful if they want to. It depends on how much they want to give, or they want to care about their clients, or how much work there or time they're willing to put in. I think that it's the type of occupation that is the case. But it is an occupation that you can factor your world and your life as a competitive athlete and still be able to do both successfully.
Yeah. Just moving from a job that is like has a contrast to what you're doing personally to something that is more aligned like that. It supports you too. And then you are going to be able to function at a higher level in that career as well. And I think if we get too caught up in, again, like that should, like this is how what I should be doing, especially if you come from maybe a background where you don't know a lot of people in bodybuilding or your family isn't very supportive, it can be difficult to say like, okay, well, I understand what I need to do to be the best and to, you know, pursue a job that supports that path. But like everyone's telling me I should do this, should do that. Yeah. And I think that what you said about your habit of stepping away and going back to yourself and checking in and saying like, okay, what am I afraid of? What do I need to do to succeed? What do I want most? Like that is so vital regardless of whether you're in bodybuilding or just in any pursuit in life, like I think that that is just a practice we should all really integrate into our lives more, because that self-reflection is the only thing that's going to give you the clarity to be the best at whatever you do.
Yeah, I think people are very scared to self-reflect. I think that they're scared to accept that something's not right, or something's kind of scary, or that they're not, it's kind of that not wanting to change because things feel comfortable. And I think that people kind of just find themselves in ruts, and it's that worry of checking in with yourself that could probably lead to probably not feeling that way anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe you find something that you don't like in your current situation, current process. And it's like, but again, that's when you're reframing that failure or falling short as an opportunity to then learn, make a change, and then kind of grow from there.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is your primary goal right now in off season? If it's like a lifting goal or lifestyle goal, what is something you're trying to accomplish?
So I would say that I would like to get 170 on my SLDL.
All right. We're manifesting that.
and I feel like I don't want to say it. Do you know, sometimes when it comes to a lift, I feel like I don't want to say it because I feel like it's not going to happen. It's very, that's a real negative thing about me. I'm very superstitious. Mm-hmm. And it was the same when I was diving. I had to wear the same swimming costume when I was doing a certain dive. And if I was not wearing that swimming costume, I would make sure it's in my bag so that if I have that dive at my training session, I would change my swimming costume. This is the same with bodybuilding. So it's not so much the fact that I've got to wear the same clothes or anything like that, but I feel like I can't say it because then it's not going to happen. And I'm doing it for 2 days.
We're going to change it. We're speaking it into existence. So I'm super excited to see it. That one better end up on your Instagram.
I'll try. If it looks terrible.
Just like rounded back, we're gonna clap anyways if it gets it off the ground.
Just pure erector pulling the 170 off the floor. There is no hammy glute in there. But that's the current goal, kind of training wise. Kind of in terms of bodybuilding. Honestly, I don't have like a weight in mind or anything like that, because I don't want to fixate on that. I want to fixate on the look. My goal in bodybuilding as a physique competitor is literally just to have a really dense posterior, because there was a lot of muscle tissue that was whacked on it last year, but like the density just wasn't. So like when you're on that side shot and you need to be a little bit thicker, and when you're in that back shot and you need that kind of thickness to be there as well as the width, like that is just visually what we need to see. I'm not bothered what I weigh. I could weigh 10 kilos less on stage. I'm not bothered, as long as that is there, as well as obviously everything else. So looking great, as long as that is there, that is the goal.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people can come in with the shape, but to actually build that level of density, it just takes time and hard training. And once you realize that that is what you're invested in this sport, it's not just coming on stage conditioned. It's not just having the shape. It's like, all right, you got to bring that level of muscularity over time. I think then you realize the value of that, like long-term commitment.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think that lots of people are very kind of, they don't understand the level up. Well, especially here in the UK. I mean, I know that kind of your amateur level shows in the US are like ridiculously like strong and stacked, but like the level up that it takes to kind of, that you take from going from winning your pro card to kind of stepping on the pro ranks and doing well. I don't think that people understand the difference, because for the most part, they obviously see the top competitors or the people that have kind of gone from doing really well in their amateurs into doing really well in their pros. And they're kind of that 1% kind of genetic elite, and they see that and that's what they expect everyone else to be able to do. But unfortunately, for the most of us, it takes a lot of hard graft, and people just don't understand what that means. It doesn't matter how you train, it doesn't matter if you want to do your high intensity or whatever, or low intensity or whatever it is that you do, but you got to bloody whack on a lot of tissue to become competitive. So I think people just don't really understand that difference sometimes.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I love, just watching your journey, and why I'm very excited to see you present next year, just because I know that you totally have that mindset. And it's just been really apparent for the past few years, and just your amount of progress over time has been very consistent. Like, it hasn't been an overnight journey. It's taken a lot of work, and it sounds like you've learned some things the hard way throughout that process, but you've done the learning, and I just think it's paying off in front of us. And you set such a good example about what's important throughout that time, and the value of taking really long off seasons, because you've done that a couple times now, where it's like you knew that the time investment was going to be worth it for that long term goal.
Yeah, and I think that that's something to tap into a little bit, is that, like, yes, I could have probably made progress a lot quicker. Yes, I could have, if I was willing to push certain things. So, like, yeah, maybe some people might rise up the ranks that aren't that genetic 1% quicker because they're willing to do that, and that's their choice. That's fine, but I'm not willing to do that, because life after bodybuilding to me does mean a lot as well, especially for the people that are in my life. Like, it does mean a lot to me. That doesn't mean that I don't give everything to the sport. It's just that from a certain aspect, I'm just not willing to push that, unfortunately, as well.
Yes. So
I think that if you're a female, sometimes, like, it's okay to have whichever choice or viewpoint you want. Like, that is your choice. But don't be kind of nervous to go against the trend of not wanting to do that. But obviously, you just have to remember that there comes a consequence, that kind of competing season to season is probably not something that you are going to be able to do, because you've just not got that extra support there.
Yeah. And again, that's just the checking in with yourself and knowing what you want in the short term and the long term, because at the end of the day, if we're looking at that pyramid, it's like we have all these needs to be a whole person, and there is probably a life on the other side of this. And I think that knowing what you want in the big picture, even if those goals kind of change over time and you reevaluate, like, all of that should weigh into the decisions that you make in any pursuit in life.
I totally agree. I had a really great client Zoom call yesterday where we talked about our identities away from being a bodybuilder, and who you are away from being a bodybuilder. A few of us were literally just still bodybuilders. A few of other people were very different. But I think the one thing that we really spoke about is, even though you have that kind of view of the future and what it is that you want to do, kind of post bodybuilding, or the fact that you are setting yourself up to be able to still be successful and have something there post bodybuilding, you still have to give everything to that goal if you want to have a chance of feeling that kind of fulfillment from that first initial bodybuilding goal.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, I want to wrap it up, but I wanted to ask you, are you, like, currently accepting clients? And if so, what would that process look like for someone?
I am currently accepting clients.
Okay. If you want to
DM me, or I have a link to my email on my Instagram. Either. I'm not the type of person that you have to be super formal with and say, "Hey, ma'am, I would like to do training with you." You don't need to send me an email like that. Just be like, "Yo, Meg, let's get talking." So either way works 100% for me. It's not a problem. But yeah, I am currently taking on clients.
Awesome. So definitely check out Meg's Instagram. Just lots of awesome content on there. She covers a lot and her training is fantastic to watch. Also has a really, really excellent YouTube and often featured on Kuba's YouTube channel as well. So it's been cool to get to see your journey over time through that. And she has videos from the last couple of years. So it's been, you can kind of go back and kind of see her journey through it all and a little bit more about your background. I know you've talked about that in some videos as well. So highly recommend you guys check that out. Meg, thank you for everything, for your warm welcome to the UK and training with me. And I'm hoping that one day we're going to get to stage together. Yes. Yes. August. So August is Texas Pro in Dallas. So we were planning a bit of a get together. So really excited about that.
Can't wait. It'll be amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.